Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Chris. I am an alcoholic. It's really good to be here. It was a fun ride out with my buddy Dave. We have a good time when we do things together. I was thinking the hands that went up earlier. There's a lot of people who are, just getting started on this journey, this recovery journey. And I want to tell you that it's, in my experience, it was the most remarkable and most rewarding journey I was ever on. I always wanted to have fun. I always wanted a lot in life. I always wanted to be where it was all happening. I wanted to have a really, really good time. And I think a lot of us are like that. We're looking for the party. Even after everybody else has gone home, we're still looking for the party. And listen, that doesn't stop when you get into recovery, okay? It's not like boring and glum and we got to go down into the basement of another church to talk about God. Kill me now. That may be your perception in the beginning, but there's an amazing amount of fun to be had. My life really started when I got involved with the work in Alcoholics Anonymous. It really did. Everything else was a pale facsimile of what my life really could have been. One of the great mistakes a lot of us make when we show up in AA or NA or whatever A you're in, one of the big mistakes that we make is we think that it's about the meetings, and the meetings are what treat our addictive illness. It couldn't be further from the truth. Dave mentioned the newest Grapevine article. It's got a big front cover on it. Don't drink and go to meetings. Now, not drinking and going to meetings is a good thing, but it's an incredibly far cry from what we have to do to be able to enjoy our lives once we get sober and once we get clean. There's work that we have to do just to be able to bear sobriety. Because what happens in addictive illness is we start to use the alcohol and we start to use the drugs to be able to cope, to be able to feel, and to be able to connect with the divine. Because that's really what we're all missing. We're all missing that connection that makes us feel like we're okay. And that's why we reach out. That's why when Dave started drinking those beers, it happened for him. And the other two muttonheads he was with didn't even realize how exciting it was to get drunk. But we do. All of a sudden, whoa! It's like they used to call the liquor stores when I was first starting to drink spirit shops. The spirit shops. Now think about this. Spirituality in a bottle. That's what it is. It will give you that for about 2 or 3 hours until you become a projectile vomiting pig. It will offer you an incredible touch of spirituality. I would be coming home from work just freaked out. It's a hard day at work. I was a bad electrician. And I worked really hard, tried not to blow stuff up, and I'd get done and I'd haul ass to the liquor store and I'd grab my bottle of vodka or my bottle of bourbon, and as soon as I had it in my hand, I would go like, ah, and as soon as I got home and I cracked the lid, I would go, ah. You know that feeling like this is going to relieve my anxiety. This is going to relieve all the self-centered fear. This is going to relieve all the spiritual malady that's on me. And I just can't wait to start drinking it. And once I started drinking it, when it was working, it gave me that sense of ease and comfort. Just being all right. When I had the right buzz on, I was in the right place at the right time with the right people. And that's always what I was looking for. And I never felt that. I never felt that without something to change the way I feel. Now, why do they call alcohol spirits? It's because people have known for thousands of years that there's a spiritual quality to this alcohol. And anybody that's done crystal meth knows there's a spiritual quality with that. And anybody that's done windowpane LSD understands that there's a spiritual quality with that too. It just backfires on your ass, you know? Because we do too much. We're like, oh, you know, one hit is good. Give me five, you know? And then we're knee walking, not able to operate our own pants zipper, screwed up, you know? That's us. So it's a problem. It's a problem. But all of a sudden we show up in Alcoholics Anonymous or something and we're like, man, the fun is over. Let me tell you, the fun is just starting. It depends what you do and who you hook up with. It really does. And don't make the mistake of thinking that going to the meetings is what's going to treat your addictive illness. Meetings are wonderful. We need to stick together. There's an incredible power in the fellowship, but meetings don't treat addictive illness. The steps treat addictive illness. In how it works, it doesn't say, you know, step 9, go to 90 and 90. You know, step 10, you know, get a home group. Step 11, you know, share in the close-minded discussion meeting all the crap that's going on in your life until other people want to puke. It doesn't say that. In how it works, it basically talks about the step process. And When I first got sober, Alcoholics Anonymous had taken such a left-hand turn that there was no big book meetings like three towns away was a big book meeting. And in that big book meeting, they'd start on the forward and read all the way through to the last page. So they'd be reading these stories, you know, I was an idiot too, and you know, all these stories that I didn't relate to at all, you know. And I was going to that big book meeting, and it didn't help at all. And then there was a ton of step meetings, okay? Now, the book 12 Steps and 12 Traditions was written for one purpose, and that was to publish the traditions. But Bill knew that it would never sell because it wasn't about us getting better. It was about how we can make a group more healthy. You know, who cares? You know, it's an alcoholic if a group is more healthy. And he knew that. He knew how selfish we were. So he wrote 12 essays on the steps knowing we would eat that up because that's about making us feel better. And so the step book was published, and all of a sudden we were too stupid. We were too stupid to understand the whole principle of the 12 and 12 when we started step meetings. There's step meetings all over the place. And step meetings are great, you know, they're good. You get to hear people share about the steps, you get to think about the steps, you get to read the steps. You know, people philosophize about the steps. Some people share about what it would be like if they ever took the step. You know, that's my favorite part. And they share for 10 minutes on it, you know. But nobody's doing them. Nobody's doing the steps in the step meeting because the step book makes you believe that if you agree with these steps in theory, you're doing them. And that's so far from the truth, it's unbelievable. So the step book just crapped on what Alcoholics Anonymous was all about. And, it, you know, I don't think Bill would have thought that was going to happen, but it did. And somewhere in the 50s, Alcoholics Anonymous took a left-hand turn, and it became okay to show up in the meetings, to sit in the back, to languish in your chair without being held accountable to working a 12-step program. It became okay to do that because we don't tell anybody what to do, you know? So all of a sudden you got unbelievably sick people in these meetings week after month after year, never getting better. Just sharing. You know what I mean? Oh, let me tell you what was going on with me this week. If you were here last week, let me update you on the dysfunction that's my life. Tell somebody who cares. Where, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous was never meant as a vehicle for you to dump, vomit forth the dysfunction of your life upon everybody else. That's not what it was ever designed for. In the early days of Alcoholics Anonymous, this is what AA looked like. You would show up on Monday, okay, and you'd talk about all the people that you're trying to find and that you're taking through the steps. And then on Tuesday, a group of you would go to the mental hospital. And then Wednesday, a group of you would go to the sanitariums or the asylums. And Thursday, a bunch of you would go to court or try to find judges who were like throwing the book at alcoholics. And they would try to find people to take them through the steps. And to be able to go to the meeting where the alcoholics were, you had to be really far along in the step process, or they didn't want you in the meeting. You had to have an honest desire to stop drinking, and that honest desire was measured by how far along you were in the steps. You know, so somewhere in the 50s, somewhere in the 60s, it became fine for us not to address our alcoholism with the spiritual program. And it's gotten so bad that the Grapevine magazine advertises that. That's our meeting in print. Oh my God, don't drink and go to meetings. There's friends of mine that are up at the podium right now holding that Grapevine up and stomping on it, lighting it on fire, just furious, pissed off. That our service structure, you know, has drifted so far away from what really works. Because here's the issue. I am what the book Alcoholics Anonymous would describe as a real alcoholic. This is how far advanced my alcoholism went. When I stop drinking, I have to be medically detoxed because I go into the DTs. The DTs are freaking out, hallucinating, fish flopping. You've probably seen the book My Name is Bill W. where he's strapped in and he's flopping. I mean, that's what happens to me when I quit drinking. I barely get to work in the morning. The minute I'm home, I start drinking. I pass out about 8 o'clock at night and sleep about 11 hours and then get back up in the morning, go to work. I can barely make it to work. I get home, I get drunk out of my mind. I go into a blackout and, I pass out and I get back up. Now it's Saturday, right? Now I can drink around the clock. Now I can get drunk, pass out, come to, get drunk, pass out, come to, and somewhere around Sunday afternoon, I try to back out of it so that I can get to work on Monday morning, and I usually can't do it. That's how far along my alcoholism is. Now, I show up in some meetings in North Jersey in the late 80s, and there's people sharing about their day. Okay? I'm out of my mind. I'm out of my mind. This is typical of me in the first 6 months. I'd be sitting in a meeting. Oh, God, this meeting. Oh, this is horrible. I hate these people. God, oh, God, listen to this guy share. What a hypocrite. Oh, my God, listen to him. Listen to him. Oh, no. What's his name? He's raising his hand. Oh, my God. Oh, please, no. Please, no. Don't pick on him. Oh, my God, they picked on him. Now I got to hear about him, share about his family. Oh, kill me. Oh, he's grateful now. Now he's a grateful alcoholic. I'm going to slash all four of his tires, and I'm going to follow him out after the meeting to see what gratitude really looks like. I mean, this is what's going through my head. I hate everybody. I'm freaking out. And somebody sharing. Trying to treat alcoholism with that kind of an approach, just going to the closed-minded discussion meetings, is like trying to stop a semi with a cobweb if you're an alcoholic. Alcoholism is aggressive. Alcoholism is all-encompassing. And you need an aggressive recovery program. You just can't sit in a chair. Sitting in a chair isn't going to help you. You might get a bit of sobriety for a period of time, but if you go to a PTA meeting, does it make you a parent? You know what I mean? If you sit in a chair in AA, is it going to make you a recovered alcoholic? I don't think so. I don't think so. So what was genius about Bill and Bob and the boys back in the 30s, what was genius was they realized that you don't address alcoholism with sobriety. They tried it 1,000 times and it never lasted. We can separate from alcohol. We can end up in jail, or we can go in for a detox. We can separate. The problem is starting again. The alcoholic always starts again. So they understood that you don't address alcoholism with sobriety. They figured out in a very, very intuitive way that you address alcoholism with spiritual living. Remember the bottle that's called spirits? What we really need is a spiritual connection with our fellow man, with ourselves, and with God. That's what we've been longing for the whole time anyway. And we've reached into drugs and we've reached into alcohol trying to fill that need that we just can't fill. What the 12 steps does, if you address the 12 steps to the best of your ability with an experienced sponsor or spiritual advisor, it gives you a spiritual awakening, which is a change in your attitude, a change in your personality, a change in your outlook, a change in your behavior. You become what the book Alcoholics Anonymous basically states as reborn. You're now looking at life with a whole nother set of glasses. And that's what we need. That's what we're looking for in alcohol. That's what we're looking for in drugs. Even if we don't know it, that's what we're looking for. And that's what the 12 steps offers. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, that's the treatment for alcoholism. And somewhere along the line, we stopped shouting that to the newcomer. And we started to say things to the newcomer like, just keep coming back. Or here's my phone number. Give me a call when your whole life blows up like the Hindenburg. Or if you feel like drinking, just eat this 90-day coin. Or whatever crap we tell people. It's irresponsible. It's irresponsible. It's involuntary manslaughter, some of the things that we say to people, because it doesn't work. It works for the heavy drinker or the drug abuser. It doesn't work for the alcoholic or the drug addict. The alcoholic or the drug addict have to have a vital spiritual experience. Here I am. I've blown up my life 1,000 times. I drank 20 years, and the first year was probably the only year it was working. I lost families, and I crashed cars, and I lost jobs, and I ended up back home at mom's at like 33, just drinking just to escape, just for oblivion, and every bit of quality had been ripped out of my life. Every positive thing that was available for me, I threw away because of my drinking. You know what we do. You know how we are. And I show up in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm really concerned now because I'm going crazy and I'm getting really violent. My last drunk, I threatened to kill my family. And I meant it, and I could have done it really easily. And I came out of that a fish flop on the floor. I came out of that, and I just knew that I was at the jumping off place that the book Alcoholics Anonymous talks about. I couldn't imagine living with alcohol. I couldn't imagine living without it. And I wished for the end. This had to be over. I couldn't feel like this anymore. I couldn't go through another day like this. Not only was my life a tragedy, but my emotional state was just crumbling in on me. I felt horrible about myself and about everything, and physically and mentally and emotionally and spiritually, I felt horrible. And I struggled back to Alcoholics Anonymous. I'd had episodes of going to meetings, I had episodes of going to treatment. Anybody in here been to a 28-day treatment center? Yeah, me too, boy. Oh my God. And all the other lying people in here aren't admitting to it. But I went to outpatient IOP. I was doing the things that I thought I needed to do to address my alcoholism. But I went back to Alcoholics Anonymous this time with a willingness that was born of desperation. I truly knew that I was grabbing onto a life preserver, and if this didn't work, I was going to drown in my own alcoholism. I was. And I went back, and what I thought I needed to do was go to meetings. I heard that meeting makers make it. That's what I heard. There was a lot of lip-flapping stuff that was going on in the late 80s. Listen, Alcoholics Anonymous is 1,000 times better now. Back in the 80s, it was horrible. If somebody goes, oh, back in the day, you know, AA was really good, don't believe them, okay? Because it was horrible in my area. You know, there was a couple of crusty old-timers, you know, and the rest of the people were just insane. And I doubt even alcoholic, because if you were an alcoholic, you couldn't have survived very long in these meetings, you know? So it was, they were filled with heavy drinkers who just didn't have anything better to do, you know, but show up at meetings. And, you know, I'm going to these meetings. I'm going to like 13 meetings a week. And I'm out of my mind. People are going, hey, Chris, how you doing? Okay, pretty good. You know, I'm like ready to explode. My head's ready to explode. I'm going for about 6 months, and I'm doing everything that they're asking me to do. There was a lot of service stuff that they would tell you to do. You know, be a coffee maker. You know, be the cookie guy. You know, that'll keep you sober. You know, buy an Oreos. Yeah. Oh, sure. Okay. I'll be the cookie guy. You know, I was a secretary over here. I was driving the boobies from the hatch to the meeting over there. I was doing all this stuff. I was going out to the diner, you know, with the other insane people. I was doing all this stuff, but I wasn't getting any better. Listen, if you're a real alcoholic or if you're a real drug addict, if you don't have a spiritual experience, what's going to happen is sobriety is going to become untenable. Every single day, it's going to close in on you a little bit more. And you're going to feel a little bit more separated from everybody and a little bit more separated from spirituality and a little bit more, just a little bit more depressed and a little bit more cranky and a little bit more judgmental. I mean, that's what's going to happen if all you're doing is not drinking or all you're doing is not using. And what's going to happen is you're not going to be able to take it anymore. And you're going to do one of three things. You're going to relapse. You're going to kill yourself. Because the alcoholic and the addict are 60 times more likely to take their own life through suicide than non-alcoholics or non-addicts. Or you will go bat-frigging crazy. And they'll have to lock you up or medicate you till all you can do is drool. That's what's going to happen to you if you're a real alcoholic or a real drug addict and you don't get a spiritual experience. That's what happens to us. We deteriorate. Just staying sober is never going to be enough for us. Just staying clean is never going to be enough for us. You know, that's the bad news. That's a step one bad news. The step two good news is this. You know, there's two things that are absolutely true for anybody new in here who hasn't gone through the steps, and that is you are in way more trouble than you think you are. Alcoholism and drug addiction are raping your life in areas you're not even awake to yet. Okay? You think it's life on life's terms. No, it's an expression of alcoholism or drug addiction that's making your life suck. That's what it is. So you're in way more trouble than you think you are. The step two good news is there's a bigger answer in the 12-step fellowships than you're giving it credit for right now. There's a much bigger answer. But you have to work for it. You can't just come in and try to get it from osmosis. You got to find somebody who's willing and experienced enough to be able to help you through the steps. You know, there's some really, really great writings that Bill Wilson himself wrote. You know, one of them is in the step book. I believe it's page 178. It says, unless each AA member, to the best of their ability, works the 12 steps, they are absolutely for sure signing their own death warrant. So Bill Wilson said himself, unless you address the 12 steps to the best of your ability, you're signing your death warrant. I would take that seriously. You know, that's pretty strong language. Another piece of information he gave us was, the primary purpose of an AA group is the teaching and practice of the 12 steps. That's the primary purpose of any AA group is the teaching and practice of the 12 steps. It's not to have a closed-minded discussion meeting where, does anybody have a problem? Yes, everybody has a problem. There's nobody working the steps in this group. Everybody's going to have a problem. And my problem's going to be worse than yours. You know, your family sucks. Oh, let me tell you about my family. Of course they have a problem. It's not what you're supposed to do. The AA group is supposed to be about the teaching and practice of the 12 steps. And a sponsor's main responsibility is an adequate presentation of the 12 steps. That's what a sponsor is supposed to do. Now, were sponsors doing that in the late 80s and early 90s when I came around? Not in my area. They would do things like, oh, you want to start the steps? Read the first step out of the step book every day for 30 days. What? What possible good would something like that do? You know what I mean? What possible? I've got it almost memorized. I can tell you that. But listen, it's not about self-knowledge. Self-knowledge doesn't do anything. You know, we can know we're in trouble. I mean, most alcoholics are like the person on the Titanic. You know, everybody's jumping in the lifeboats, and you're like, I'm not getting in that lifeboat until I find out who was in charge of looking for icebergs. You're going down. You're going down. Who cares? Who cares? Knowing why is the booby prize. You know what I mean? There's actions that we have to take. Now, when I first showed up in Alcoholics Anonymous, they were afraid to talk about God. Oh, don't talk about God. You'll scare the newcomer. You know? If you talk about God like an idiot, you'll scare the newcomer. You know, if you try to make him sell flowers at the airport, you'll scare the newcomer. But the thing about the spirituality of the 12 steps, Bill Wilson was a New Thought guy. He was studying the New Thought guys. And we bring to the concept of God all of our bizarre belief systems. Some of them were foisted on us by bad religious teachers when we were young. Sometimes we just made them up ourselves from picture books that we saw. A lot of times we have really bizarre concepts of God. A lot of times we're too religious, you know. We're like blinded by, you know, dogma. You know, sometimes we're radical non-believers and we hate anything that even smells of religion. We come into Alcoholics Anonymous with all these distorted belief systems. The good news about step two and step three is Bill Wilson believed in a God that was more a verb than a noun. What do I mean by that? My conception when I walked through the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous, that when you said God, what I thought was a man with white hair sitting on a throne up in heaven with a big ledger book, you know, with a page just dedicated to the Schroeder kid. You know what I mean? And he was keeping track. Oh, oh, 24 years in purgatory. Oh, here's another one. And I thought that this was going to be a judgmental Old Testament, turn your wife to salt, kill your camel kind of a guy. You know what I mean? I mean, that's what I was thinking about. Now, when you read the literature, the AA literature, God is about a spiritual power. They keep talking about a power. You know, the Father of light, power. Now, what I've found through my experience working the steps is what the steps do is the steps give you access to that power. Listen, if we have to admit in step one that we're powerless over alcohol or drugs and our lives are unmanageable, then lack of power is our problem. Not lack of understanding, not lack of knowledge of triggers, not lack of any of that stuff. Lack of power. We don't have the power to stay separated from drugs and alcohol because we deteriorate spiritually over time, staying straight or sober. And we just can't take it after a while. I mean, that's our problem. And sometimes we're not even there for our relapse. I mean, I relapsed one time convinced that it was going to help my sobriety. How do you do that? I bought a gallon of vodka to improve my sobriety. That's powerless, folks. You know, I mean, if your alcoholism has to talk you into drinking it again to help you, that's powerless. So if powerlessness is really our problem, then power would be our solution. Not a concept of a God sitting up on a throne with a ledger book, but the concept of a spiritual power that can work in us and through us and enable us to stay clearly and cleanly in the sunlight of the Spirit. And in the sunlight of the Spirit, we can grow and we can heal. And what we do is we take ourselves out of the sunlight of the Spirit, and we do that with self. We do that with the character defects that we start to learn about in step 4, 5, 6, and 7. So what the steps do is the steps offer us a power that can work in us and through us. It offers us the power of the sunlight of the Spirit. What we must always know, though, is we are not the sun. If we think we are the sun, I'll show you how that can happen. You get up and you're celebrating 90 days and somebody goes, "Hey, Harry, tell us how you did it." And you go, "Well, I went to meetings and I got a sponsor and I did this and I did this and I did this, and that's why I'm sober." You miss the whole point. You go to meetings and you get a sponsor and you work the steps because you're powerless. Because doing those things puts you into the spiritual atmosphere where the power greater than yourself can work in you and through you. And you don't have to have a religious conception of God. You just have to understand that that power exists. And that you see that power existing in other people. You see it in recovered people. Somebody that gets up in front of a microphone or something and says, "I'm a recovered alcoholic," and then goes on to show you how great their life is. Obviously, there's some kind of power that's working in them and through them. And some of us call that power God. Some of us call it a power greater than ourselves. Doesn't really matter. But once you believe that that's possible, you need to make a decision to seek that power like the drowning seeks a life preserver. Because that's the power that's going to keep you separated from drugs and alcohol and enable your life to become rebuilt. Because what happens is we come in here and our life has been a total failure. Even if we've been making a lot of money, even if we've got great families, even if we've got good friends, even if there's some stuff going on in our lives, our life has been a total failure. That's a concession that we need to make in step 3. And so we make a decision to seek this power greater than ourselves, because that's what's going to set us up. That's what's going to offer us the spirit that we've been looking for in the bottle or the pipe. You know, that's what's going to do it. In step 4, the first thing they ask us to do is look at what's not working in your life. If your life is going to get any better, you need to have an accurate self-appraisal. Now, the alcoholic is so insane, they're so deluded, that they've been blowing up their life for 20 years, and they think it's everybody else's fault. When I came in here, my wife left me when I needed her most. The cops were always after me. My boss is an idiot. My family doesn't understand. And my friends are disloyal. You know, all those things were true. All those things were true when I came in here. After I got done with a 4-step, my wife left me because I pulled a knife on her. You know, that's why she left. She would have been crazy to stay. Yeah, my friends were disloyal, and they got the hell away from me as fast as they could because I would become violent when I was in a blackout, and I was in a blackout every day. You know, I could go on and on and on. What I did was I stopped swinging the light. The 4-step helps you to stop swinging the light. You want to swing the light on everybody and everything, and this is why my life sucks, and I'm a victim. Victims die in Alcoholics Anonymous. You got to take that light and you got to shine it right back on yourself. And that's what a 4-step does. A 4-step shows you where you have been at fault. You know, it shows you that the problems in your life are your own fault. Your problems are not coming at you. They are all coming from you. And that's what a 4-step will show you. And it's not going to be a happy moment, you know, when you realize that you're the one that shot yourself in the foot every time. But it's a very freeing experience, because if you're the one causing all the problems in your life, there's some hope at the end of the tunnel. You can learn how to not to keep doing that. You can learn how not to create any more chaos in your life. And you do that through the spiritual principles of the program. That's why we try to practice these principles in all of our affairs. Because we don't want to keep, you know, feeding the dysfunction in our life. So in step four, we learn that our anger, our fears, and the conduct that we present when we're walking around with other people on this planet. Those are the three big things where we need a complete rebuilding. We need to rebuild the way we address the world. We need to start learning some spiritual principles that are actually going to work. We share all this stuff in step five. We find somebody, the first time I ever was completely honest with somebody. I remember my first fifth step, I was walking through a park reading this thing like, oh, I was resentful for my mother. You know, I mean, I was resenting all this stuff, right? And I felt horrible. I felt, you know, when I got done with that, I lifted my head up for the first time in years and felt like maybe I was not that much of a scumbag. Maybe I'm not that bad of a person. You know, maybe this is an illness. Maybe this is a disease. Maybe I've been suffering spiritually, mentally, and physically with an illness. And maybe I can recover from it. Maybe I can recover from it. It was the first time I started to feel that way after that fifth step. Now I have to look very, very closely at where's the power in my life. Step six basically says, become willing to have God remove these defects of character. It does not say, become willing to work on all these character defects so I can get better. I can be a better person. It doesn't say that. It says, become willing to have God remove all these defects. Listen, if you could remove your defects of character yourself, wouldn't you have done a better job by now? How many in here bought self-help books? How many in here bought lots of self-help books? How many in here were helped by them? Let the record show all 600 people here tonight, not a person raised their hand. These tapes will go back to my home group. Anyway. We can help ourselves. We can listen to Tony Robbins lectures and read Think and Grow Rich till the cows come home. It isn't going to help us. It's not going to help us because we can't help ourselves. Our whole life, the foundation of our lives is built on selfishness, self-centeredness, self-involvement, and self-deception. I mean, we can't fix ourselves. But a power greater than ourselves can fix ourselves. So in step seven, it says, we ask God to remove these defects of character. And we do. We have to start living a spiritual life for this to work. But we ask God, remove these things. They're too big for me. Just like we ask God to remove our alcoholism or our drug addiction. It's too big. It's too big. We don't have the power to do it ourselves. We don't have the power to fix our own character defects. Working on your character defects is like playing whack-a-mole. Has anybody in here ever played whack-a-mole? You know, you get the mole pops up and you try to hit it with the hammer, but by the time you're hitting one mole, another one's popping up. You know, trying to work on your character defects is like trying to whack the mole. And my sponsor told me one time, Chris, you keep whacking the mole like that, you could go blind. So sponsors sometimes have a lot of wisdom, you know. And I understood immediately what he was saying. So step seven, humbly ask God to remove these character defects. Okay, God, please take them. Now, what's the best possible atmosphere to be in for the removal of character defects? To become willing to make amends to the people and institutions that these character defects have harmed. And actually, I'm going to change the steps. I'm going to say actually made direct amends to those people and those institutions who your character defects have harmed. Because so many of us think that we just need to agree with step nine in theory. No, you have to pay the money back. No, not the money! Dave, not the money! I wouldn't have stolen all that money if I knew I had to pay it back! Yes, you have to pay it back. You also have to knock on those doors of the people that you've harmed. You're going to hear a lot of that in step nine if you're paying attention to the step. Okay? If you're going to hide out or you're going to get a sponsor who'll tell you, you don't really need to make that amends because except where to do so will harm them or others and your others. If you're going to get like an idiot that tells you that, then you're going to shortchange your whole spiritual experience. Okay? Because you know what? You ain't others. You ain't others. You got to be willing to go to jail. It doesn't say that you got to go to jail, but it says you got to be willing. You got to be willing to make these amends. You want to put horsepower in your recovery? Step 9 is the step. Don't shirk from this step. Don't be afraid of this step. Our alcoholic ego will tell us this: I can't go there. I can't make that amends. They'll think I'm small. No, they think you're small now. When you make the amends, they'll think you're pretty large. You know, we got it wrong. We got it wrong. So step 9, incredibly important. Step 10, what is step 10 except applying every single one of these spiritual principles on a reactive, real-time, walking around through the day basis? We learn principles, and we learn behaviors, and we learn reactions that are spiritual in their nature, and we use those instead of our old skill set. My main skill set was fight or flight. And what I mean by that is I would avoid. I'll kill you! I mean, there was no black or white. You know what I mean? I had no conflict resolution. I had no perspective. I would just be completely out of my mind, and I could never get anything done. And the anxiety and the self-centered fear kept me from doing anything that I really needed to do to have a successful life. You know, so step 10 is all about applying these steps where they're necessary. If something comes up in the day, if you owe an amends, if you need to inventory something, if you need to talk to somebody, what you do is you apply the principles that you've learned in the previous 9 steps and in 11 and 12. Step 11 is a step I love, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God. One of the great promises in the book Alcoholics Anonymous that is mind-blowing is the consciousness of the presence of God will be the most important thing in our lives after we've had a spiritual experience. The consciousness of the presence of God. I'll bet you most people in here know what faith is. Like, I have faith in God. You know, I go to church every Sunday. I've got faith. The difference between having faith in God and understanding the consciousness of the presence of God is the difference between night and day. It's the difference between not having any power and having a power that works in you and through you that you're consciously awake to. It's an amazing promise, and that's what the steps offer us. It's an amazing promise. So what we'll do in step 11 is we'll seek through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact, the consciousness of the power of God in our lives. We're going to continue to grow in understanding and effectiveness. We're going to continue to nurture and become awake to that power that's keeping us away from drugs and alcohol and enabling our lives to come back together. You know, that's really what step 11 is. And I love step 11. You know, Dave was talking about some spiritual exercises that I gave him. The book Alcoholics Anonymous says there's some great books out there. Go to some priests, ministers, or rabbis and get some suggestions. Because once you get on a spiritual path, you're going to hunger for more of it. You know, I mean, that's the way we are. When we get a line of Coke, we hunger for another line of Coke. When we get a whiskey at the bar, we're going to, you know, bartender, back that up. Don't go too far. You know, I mean, we're going to want another one. Well, the same thing with the spiritual life. So it's through a lot of good books. You know, one of the things that Dave was talking about was the sacraments of penance. St. Augustine, from the 400s, you know, one of the very first church elders, way the hell back when, you know, 1,800 years ago, put these things together so that the people in his denominations wouldn't fight with each other. You know, we're always fighting with each other. That's not new. You put us all in one room, and you know, pretty soon, you know, we're gonna be arguing and fighting or having issues. That's just the way we are. So he put these sacraments of penance together, and what they are is they're a list of character defects, and they're explained in incredible detail. You know, so gluttony is explained in incredible detail. You know, and there's about 40 of these character defects. And every once in a while, when somebody's been through the steps 3 or 4 times, I'll give them this additional exercise because it'll wake them up to some character defects they're probably not even aware of. You know, because we have to keep growing. We have to keep working at this thing. We have to keep improving. The wonderful thing about Alcoholics Anonymous is that it is a journey. It's not a destination. You don't wake up one day fully recovered and everything's fine and there's nowhere else to go. every single day I fall short in word, thought, and deed. Every single day there's incredible room for improvement in my life. And I actually see that as a positive thing today, because it gives me hope. It gives me some things that I can work on. And I can continue to apply these spiritual principles in my life, because I don't do a great job at it, but I've got hopefully I'll have a few more years to get a little bit better at it. So it's a journey, and the journey is amazing. I've had an amazing journey these past 24 years. I really have. I am blessed. You know, I've been overpaid in every way in my life because of these spiritual principles. You know, I would be dead. I would have died by 91 or 92. I would have been dead if I continued drinking the way I was drinking, because I was just nuts. And I did some of those non-conference approved drugs myself, Dave. You know, I remember because of my detoxing, I went to the doctor one time. I said, Doc, I'm just nervous. I wake up in the morning. And he puts his stethoscope on my heart, and my heart's going boop, 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 because I'm going through detox. And he goes, oh, sounds like you have acute anxiety brought on by a protracted mitral valve. And I go, sounds good, Doc. Got anything for that? You know, and he goes, well, yeah, there's this new drug. It's called Xanax. And, you know, I think I'll prescribe some of that for you. I go, what kind of milligrammages does it come in, Doc? Because I'm going to need the big ones. And he did. He gave me the big milligram. And I got to the point very quickly, I wasn't even counting them. I was weighing them. And feels like enough, you know, quarter pound of Xanax, you know, and washing them down with vodka. Man, that noodles you, let me tell you. Man, you are limber, you know, when you do stuff like that. You know, so that's just the way things work. But, you know, another time, everybody in here probably understands the Lincoln Tunnel, right? I'm sure most people have been through it. Well, I'm in a concert in the city one night with some of my friends, and we're drunk. I was always drunk, but we're drunk. And we go, hey, let's go to the bathroom. We hear some people are selling drugs in there. All right, let's go. So we go in the bathroom, and there's some guys, dude selling acid, man. You know, so we buy a bunch of acid, we eat it, and we go back, and we listen to like one song. Okay, you know how we are. And we're like, are you high? I'm not high. We got ripped off. Let's go back and buy some more. So we go back and we buy more acid from somebody else, and we eat that, and then we go back and we sit down, and like two songs later, we're still not high. It's because it takes about 45 minutes to work. Well, we got no sense of time, so we got ripped off. So we go back in and we buy more. I'm telling you, by the encore, we're like this. You know what I mean? It's like we're in a Roger Rabbit cartoon. You know? Whoa, whoa. And we all at the concert's over. We move down. We get down. We all came in a van, and we all get in the van. We're so high, none of us are talking, right? We're just like. And the guy starts driving. And you know how you go toward the Lincoln Tunnel? It's like 10 lanes, 8 lanes, 6 lanes, 4 lanes, 2 lanes, tunnel. Okay. Well, we're getting down to the 2 lanes, and somebody from the front of the van goes, hey man, we'll never fit, right? And so we all start moving forward in the van, you know, to take a look ourselves. We're like, he's right. It's a mouse hole, you know. So we start back. You ever try to back out of the Lincoln Tunnel? Oh man, people get cranky when they're near tunnels, you know, blowing their horn. Took us about 45 minutes to get out of there, and you know, we took the bridge. It was safe. Oh my God! Another time, the great Quaalude epidemic of '73. Now there's a lot of young people in here. You probably don't know what a Quaalude is. I mean, they were immediately taken on, you know, made illegal because they were so dangerous. But what they were, a Quaalude is like drinking one Quaalude is like drinking a 12 pack of malt liquors immediately. I mean, that's what it's like. You're like, whoa! And we go into school. We go into school. This is 1973, and we're all at high school. And we're at the smoking area, and my buddy John comes with a big sack of pills. You know, this is where you get everything going in the morning. And he puts them down, and he goes, I got Quaaludes. And we're like, Quaaludes, what are those? He goes, yeah, they're really good. My brother got them. And they're like, we're like, okay, how much are they? They're a dollar. Okay. So we're all buying them. We go, how many should you do? And he goes, I don't know, 2 or 3. So like 50 of us do 2 or 3 Quaaludes before first period in high school. Let me tell you, the ambulance was back and forth all day long. I mean, the last thing I remember is I'm walking down the hall like this, hanging on the locker, and I see the exit sign, exit, exit. I go, I got to exit. You know, I got to get out of here. And I remember busting through the exit and heading for the woods. And I get out into the woods, and there's people out there holding trees. It's like it's a whole bunch of people that already got out there. Oh my God, it was deadly. There were people passing out in front of the principal. But the next day at school, I'm in there, and people are like pointing at me and laughing. I'm like, what are you laughing at? You made a break for the woods yesterday, didn't you? I'm like, yeah. I come to find out, the whole 400 wing watched me head for the woods. And the guy goes, I'm going, well, what's so funny about that? He goes, dude, it took you 5 minutes to go 100 yards. I'm like, I thought I was hauling ass. Oh my God. So, this kind of stuff was happening in my life. And I continued to do this stuff for years. And it got to the point where there was no fun left in it at all. There was no party. The party was over years ago. But I'm still stuck, using this stuff. Now, step 12. I'm going to end on this. Step 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps. Please remember that. You have a spiritual awakening. That's the treatment for alcoholism. You get that spiritual awakening through the practice of the 12 steps. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these 12 steps, we tried to carry this message to other alcoholics and practice these principles in all of our affairs. Practicing the principles in all of our affairs, we just try to do the best we can do, and we continue to reach out for the power. We continue to engage the power. We continue to ask the power for help. And what we do is what we can do on the ground is what we can practice these principles in all of our affairs. Now, if you've had a spiritual awakening as the result of the 12 steps, the first thing you're going to want to do is share that. Sometimes it's dangerous. Like, I started a big book group in our area, and we were really the first group to really get people excited about the steps and really offer them a forum to get through the steps, to actually take the steps. And the first thing they did was get pissed. They're like, oh my God, why didn't somebody tell me about this before? All of a sudden they have a spiritual awakening and they're free. And they're going like, why didn't anybody tell me this before? And they start going back to their groups going, you guys trying to kill me! You never told me about the steps! You're trying to kill me! It was on the wall the whole time. How it works. We're the idiots that, somebody goes, how does it work? I don't know how it works. It just works. You asshole! It's up on the wall how it works. How it works is step 1 through 12. That's how it works. Not that I judge. But anyway, what happens is the spiritual awakening just makes you so grateful that you want to give it to other people. It would be like finding the cure to cancer. If you find the cure to cancer, you're not going to go home. You know what I mean? You're going to say, you're going to start yelling, hey, I got the cure. And that's really what we should be doing. We should be going into the meetings where there are people who are suffering from untreated alcoholism. You know how you recognize untreated alcoholism? Because they're cranky. That's why. And they're all shut in. They're shut inside themselves. That's untreated alcoholism. And being restless, irritable, discontented, having shame, guilt, remorse, anxiety, self-centered, fear, depression. That's untreated alcoholism, folks. The two things that every alcoholic has in their first month of sobriety? Every single one of them. Depression and anxiety. What happens when you go to a doctor with those two? They're going to mistake the symptom for the illness. In us, our illness is the cause. The depression and the anxiety are situational. They're not clinical most of the time. So that's what happens, and that's what untreated alcoholism looks like. And that's why we kill ourselves after a period of time. That's why we relapse after a period of time, because we can't take it anymore. So what we need to do is we need to recognize individuals like that. We need to do what they did back in the old days. We need to share our story with them, explain to them that we've got a solution, and place ourselves appropriately available to them to go through the 12 steps. That's what we need to do. And you want, this is what heals your spirit. We have a spiritual illness. What heals our spirit is the compassion and the charity and the 12-step work that we do. That's what heals our spirit. You know, we can't just sit there. You know, we have to express our gratitude. Gratitude is an action. We need to express our gratitude, making ourselves available to help other alcoholics. Hey, it's been great. You know, York is a fun town. Over the years, I've sent a lot of people to the recovery residences here. You guys are well known for all that. It's great to be back in York, and thank you, everybody, for sitting here and listening.